Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. If you know a kid headed off to college soon, chances are greater than ever that he or she is going to load up on math and science classes. Almost all the fastest growing majors over the last few years have been STEM oriented, whether it's petroleum engineering or behavioral science. But ask grad students and recent grads in STEM how things are going, and you're going to get a more tempered view of the employment picture.
The faculty tenure track jobs are very scarce and extremely competitive, and you need to be very flexible about moving wherever in the country those jobs would open up. And I think a lot of students realize that partway through the program, and despite their passion for the research, they realize that it will be more realistic for them to take a different track.
In terms of theoretical physics, I would say that the job prospects of getting some sort of job that uses some of the skills you learn in your PhD is very high.
Sometimes people go to graduate school since they can't find a job. I've seen that.
I wanted to be a scientist, or at least I thought I did at the time. Not having been through the more painful parts of graduate school yet, I, you know, hadn't really come face to face with the kind of highs and lows that you can experience as an academic scientist. So at the time, I thought, you know, I really like thinking about science and doing science. This is what I want to do. And that did change over time.
Hal Saltzman has been looking at whether the promise of these abundant jobs embraced by politicians and tech titans and a lot of parents is holding up. He's a professor of public policy at Rutgers University. Hal, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we actually talked a little bit about this issue a few years ago, a little closer to the heart of the recession. And at that time, you said it's pretty tough for people who have STEM degrees, science, technology, engineering, math, to find the kind of jobs that they're looking for. What has changed, would you say, in the past, you know, 3 years?
Well, the job market's picked up a little bit overall. So, you know, if you have a college degree or a STEM degree, you're more likely to find a job. But in terms of finding a job in a STEM field, that hasn't changed a whole lot. We're still graduating many more STEM graduates than there are STEM jobs. So depending on the field, if you're in science, about twice as many, three times as many science graduates at a bachelor's level than find a job. Engineering does better. About two-thirds of engineers end up in an engineering job. And in computer science, it's also about two-thirds will end up in a computer science job.
Now, how is it possible that we're educating so many scientists who are not finding jobs? I mean, you always hear from political leaders, from leaders in education, we've got to get people more into STEM fields. Are people just completely misguided? What's going on? Shouldn't we be having more scientists?
You know, I think it's a number of factors. Partly is that there is a very large effort, a well-funded effort to promote science, which is good. I mean, we want to have a lot of science literacy. And then that overlaps with trying to create more scientists and increase the labor supply. So on the one hand, we want to have science. You need to have good science literacy. And I think that's positive. But then that gets pushed into trying to create more people occupationally who become scientists. And that's where we run into trouble. At the PhD level, for example, which is what, you know, about half, two-thirds of scientists have a PhD, the problem is not enough scientists, but way too many of a glut. So if you look at the National Institutes of Health, which is, you know, the largest agency funding scientists and supporting science, their number one problem is what to do with the excess number and the, you know, the large supply of PhD scientists.
Well, and you hear that from grad students. Maybe there should be an effort to increase science literacy, but that may not mean that we need to be minting more scientists.
Exactly. And I think that's part of what confuses the conversation. Well, everybody needs to know more science to understand the world around us. Not everybody has to be a scientist because there just aren't those jobs.
So let's break this down a little bit. Do you feel like there's a big difference when we talk about science, technology, engineering, math, and we lump them all together as STEM, that in fact, there are areas there where, you know, if you major in math or whatever, that's fantastic. But if you major in biology, you're in real trouble.
Well, you know, it's a good point. National Institutes of Health has created a program last couple years in 17 universities to help PhD biomedical scientists find alternative careers outside of academia, outside of research, doing other things because the jobs just don't exist.
And what kind of things do they do?
That's what the program is trying to find. Anything could be patent lawyer. It could be science writer. That's this project they've launched is to try and find out what are the careers that they can find. The problem it raises is even in these alternative careers, are they really PhD level jobs? You know, somebody who's spent 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, if they've gone through a postdoc in science, going to find a career that uses that kind of experience and education and foregone earnings? Or are they going to end up in jobs they could have done without those years of education and training? So that's the sciences field.
Well, and I've also heard from people getting graduate degrees in biology and in biomedical sciences, as you say, that postdoctoral positions have gotten longer. The numbers have increased. So instead of we think of a PhD maybe taking 5 or 6 years, really the whole process is taking like 10, 12 years before they get to a point where they can actually look for a job as a professor, the kind of job they probably really want.
Right. It's pretty dismal if you look at the statistics overall. So say 6 years to a PhD, then you have a 4-year postdoc. I think entry-level postdoc salaries are $45,000 a year. You might top out at 50-odd thousand a year after 4 years. If you do a second postdoc, it's 8 years. So I think you're now mid-30s, late-30s, maybe early-40s on the job market looking for an entry-level job, having earned $50,000 a year with a PhD as our best and brightest, with not great chances. It's
right.
Really not a way to encourage the best in our science.
So let's go back to that alphabet then. We talked about science. Technology seems like a slam dunk. I mean, there's startups all over the place. You got big, big companies like Facebook and Apple that are doing tremendously well and hiring people all over the place. Would you say that's a place where you want your kid to be, majoring?
If you're one of the lucky few, if you're part of the 10% who get one of those terrific jobs, I think Google talks about having over 1,000 applicants for every job.
Whoa.
So if you land one of those jobs, you're doing well. But those headlines mask what the great number of T or technology jobs are. So if we look at it, technology overall is mostly IT because the rest of it's usually engineering. So if you're a computer scientist, your prospects are reasonably good if you come out of a good school. But even there, it's not terrific. Only about 2/3 of computer scientists end up in the IT field. So we're producing many more computer scientists than are in jobs every year.
Does that mean 1/3 are just giving up and saying, I can't find a job doing computer science?
Well, the survey that looked at those who were in computer science, who didn't get a computer science job, about half said they found a better job elsewhere.
Okay.
1/3 said they couldn't find a job. So it's a mix. The other problem is the kinds of jobs and careers in computer science. You know, apart from the Google, the Apples, the 10-15% of IT jobs for computer scientists that are terrific, for most of them, it's a rather uncertain future for a couple reasons. We looked at some job ads, DICE online job ads. Half of the jobs advertised were part-time contract jobs, not career jobs, and certainly not the kinds of jobs that are going to pay back those college loans.
Right. And you've also got a whole startup world where presumably many companies are not going to be around in 5 or 10 years. So it may be that you get a job, but you're jumping to something else pretty quickly.
Well, that's true. We talk about the startups. We don't talk about the burnouts that a lot of companies start up, but a lot also fail. Most of the IT jobs, 70-80% of them are coding, keeping systems running, the ordinary tech jobs that pay fairly well, but the careers there are just disappearing for a couple reasons. One, a lot of change and restructuring. The second is Congress has provided this huge guest worker program. So we're bringing in guest workers to replace, onshore and the domestic workforce. So by our estimates, The number of guest workers are equal to 2/3 of all new hires in IT. So early entry-level careers, 2/3 are guest workers, which means replacing jobs. It also means keeping wages low. It also means shortening careers.
Increased competition, really, for the jobs that there are.
Yeah, you can't compete with, you know, there's a huge supply of global labor that will come in at low cost. And, you know, recent example, Southern Cal Edison just replaced its entire 500-person IT workforce and went to an offshore company. Mm. And jobs were gone. You know, those were great middle-class jobs, stable jobs, and they're gone. And that is the story that keeps rolling out in the tech sector.
Let's go to the E and M of STEM, engineering and math. What's the prospect like there if you're a civil engineer? I mean, that seems like a very – being an engineer seems to me, and I think to a lot of people, like a very sort of high-quality, steady job.
Well, again, the answer is it depends on which sector. Aerospace – again, depending on what happens to aviation, Boeing's had a lot of layoffs. With new aircraft coming online, that could pick up. If the one bright spot, or that was the great bright spot, was petroleum engineering. So that was the example where there was a real demonstrated shortage. The old workforce was retiring. And there was a huge surge in hiring. And with it, a tremendous increase in wages. And the result was programs expanded. And the number of petroleum graduates almost tripled within a few years. But even before the drop in oil prices, the expansion was overshot the mark. And so now we're just talking to a number of chairs of petroleum engineering departments. And they've said they've worried that they're overproducing petroleum engineers now.
Now, do you think that colleges and universities have a responsibility? We talked a little bit about this idea that there's a lot of people being produced in certain areas, taking them a long time to get through the graduate degree process, and they may not find a job. Do you think they have a responsibility to say, hey, I know you think that getting a graduate degree in chemistry is going to be a surefire way to a great career, but you haven't been through this program yet, and we're here to tell you that's actually not true. So we're going to maybe cap the number of people who come in, let's say.
That is the tough question that we all struggle with in the university, right? That we don't want to necessarily foreclose opportunities to people. And, you know, in certain programs, we rely on them for our revenue. And as state funding is cut, and that's part of the reason for the glut, particularly at the master's level, is that we expand master's programs because that helps support the university.
And presumably it's helpful to have people working in lab for not that much money helping out their professors.
Well, of course. And that's at the PhD level that we depend on that. For the labs survive on that labor at a huge savings. So the labs really depend on that PhD level. And so it's tough to ask somebody to cut their labor force or increase their labor costs. So it's a tough one. Some programs have been acting proactively and limiting the number, realizing that it's irresponsible to produce more graduates than the job market can absorb, particularly at the master's and PhD level. You know, partly the market does kind of govern that. And the problem there becomes when, I think we talked about earlier, this narrative that there's a shortage. And that's what then encourages people mistakenly to go pursue a field where the jobs aren't there. So, you know, for example, computer science. We've been hearing about the computer science world is booming and everybody should pursue this area and the tech companies are hiring. And students listened. So enrollments have gone up. Number of graduates have gone up in recent years. And this past year, in one survey, entry-level surveys for computer occupations dropped 9%.
Wow. Okay, a final question for you. So then what should politicians and parents be saying to kids about STEM fields? I mean, there's a lot of sort of rah-rah, you should become a scientist. What should they be saying?
You know, follow your talents as well as opportunity. So if you really love science.
Yeah, but that's not a lot of concrete guidance.
You know, it becomes individual. I mean, if you really love science and that's what you want to do. My daughter is going into biochemistry. Right, given what I've been saying, but she loves it. And she's great at it, she has talent, she loves it, and I think she should pursue it. If somebody that's not their love. And this happens more in the tech fields and engineering. We find a lot of freshmen come in and they're told, you know, be an engineer, go into IT. It's not their love. It's not their passion. Yeah. They shouldn't pursue it. So if your passion is there, there are jobs. But if that's not your passion, if that's not what you're really good at, if that's not what you love, you shouldn't force yourself into a field, particularly if there aren't great employment prospects. If you think you're going there just for the job, you're mistaken. You shouldn't go into STEM.
Hal Saltzman is a professor of public policy at Rutgers. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you for having me.
And before we go, here's more of what we heard from science and engineering students and recent grads.
That systemic pattern of graduate students spending years of their life in a research program that may be benefiting broader society, but often is coming at a personal sacrifice, is something that we have to look at. And there's definitely a lot of discussion of that in the biomedical field right now.
I think the opportunities are there for people who want to do it and who are interested in it. I think that, if anything, the work needs to be done sort of on the other end of making sure that the people who decide that they don't necessarily want to become professors have the training they need to make a smooth transition to something else.
I mean, there's certainly a limit to the number of faculty positions there are, but I'm also not sure how many students actually want them anymore because there's such a huge diversity in the types of careers you can have. You can go into industry, you can go into patent law, you can do other types of educational outreach and all kinds of other things.
And it really depends on like what's flashy at the time. You know, right now, technology is really flashy, so a lot of students want to get into that kind of field because they feel like, ooh, I can go out and make a lot of money.
And it's not that more people necessarily need to major in physics. It'd just be great if everyone could be as conversant in a scientific field as if they had taken an intro class just by virtue of having gone through college.
Yeah, you know, the job market's tough, but the job market's tough for a lot of different fields. So what's to say 5 years from now, we're not, you know, we haven't created a new type of field that utilizes this, you know, a PhD or other scientific degree. We can't necessarily anticipate what is going to happen in the future. But I think one thing that we do know is that, you know, science and engineering and technology isn't diminishing in our lives.
Thanks for that inside look at the STEM world from Matthew Pyers, Yonatan Khan, Anne Feagan-Dermid, Rabeh Majidi, Peter Yang, and Erica Polles.